Welcome back to the Nullified Take channel on YouTube, where we've got the TNT takes for you on Australian Survivor Titans versus Rebels week four. We're at episode 12. Who would have believed it? It's come and gone in a flash. We're already halfway into the season. The merge is around the corner. So much happened this week, but most of all, we finally got to see Hurricane Kelly in full glory. And I know Mucky would have been so proud of the strategic mastermind of Kelly and how she played this week. Tell us, Mucky, did she live up to that expectation? You've been saying this whole season, she's got a plan, guys. This is what it is. You guys just don't understand brilliance. How do you feel now that we've seen the brilliance in its full glory this week, Mucky?
Well, it wasn't really a hurricane, if I'm being perfectly honest. It was more sort of like a rainstorm. I was expecting a lot more from Hurricane Kelly in this episode because it was really advertised, Hurricane Kelly is going to mess everything up. Nah, not really. It was a bit of a letdown, really. It's like when they say it's a thunder lightning storm, but it's just a piss drop of rain. So I was a bit disappointed with that, but I loved Kelly throughout this whole season. I thought she was fantastic.
Mucky, you heard it here first. It's Kelly's number one fan on the podcast. Kahuna, how's things going on your end, mate? What was your highlight? Obviously, Mucky had his eyes on, you know, Kelly, Hurricane Kelly this week, and she halfway delivered on a little bit of excitement there for him. Who did you feel like was the standout performer for you in week four?
First of all, Kelly gave me the biggest WTF moment of the whole thing when she had her little birthday celebration for her son. That I thought, like, I must have zoned out for a second because I was like, oh no, is he like past? Is like the way she was acting? And then I was like, oh, it's his birthday. Oh my God, shut up. But for me, the week of like the redemption a little bit, not in a great spot still, but Perez and Eileen having like the week, the future Mrs. Hope, having a hell of a week, like just amazing in challenges, pulling it out in the twist that screwed Charles, and then being able to, you know, avoid elimination and really get through the merge, you know, on the back foot. Amazing week for them.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely a big week for them. They were playing from the bottom, and I still firmly believe that Ferris is the kind of guy that has to play from the bottom. I don't know if he's someone that if he had power in the game and he was actually in control, if he wouldn't know what to do with it. I feel like Ferris is one of those players that he just really enjoys the chaos, the paranoia. That is his home. That is where he lives. That's how he wants to play the game. And Aileen, she's getting dragged along by Ferris, if she likes it or not, kicking and screaming. This is not the game that Aileen wanted to play coming into the season. She wanted to be a queen. She did want to be. She is a queen still, I know, in some people's eyes. But, you know, she wanted to come into this game and control it from the beginning to end. And I don't feel like that is the game that she's played so far this season. But Tom, what's your highlight? What stood out for you this week most of all?
Oh, I don't know, honestly. Like, I think it was probably the weakest week, in my opinion. It was still great. Like, I think every episode's been like a home run except for episode 11 this season. But even though it was terrible in a game sense, I loved the tribal council that Charles got out, even though if that happened to me, I would like, oh, I would rage on the spot. Just that worst way to be voted out of the game ever, I think.
Yeah. So I'll go into my highlight. I'll go into my highlight of the week before we get into the live audience and say hello to everybody here in the live. I know there's quite a few of you already there. Some have been going off in the comments section, so we will be reading out some of those very soon. My highlight of the week was Mr. Jaden Jordan himself clutching the win from the back, hitting nothing but with net. Like, the guy could not miss, you know, and they were so far behind at that point when Jaden finally got the ball. I think there was like, they had to get a six, and the Titans had four already landed with Jaden like cool, calm, and collected, just being like, "Yeah, give me the ball. I'll do them shot after shot." I half expected him to do the last shot, like turning around, looking away from the net while it landed. That's how cool he was. Like, listen, Tom, do you think that there's some scouts looking at Jaden as a prospect, maybe for some Australian basketball in the future? Because I feel like he's got the magic arm, if you know what I mean.
I mean, could you imagine trying to get the ball off him? Like he'd be like, oh, no, bro.
you know what? As far as scouts go, I did see on his Instagram, Jaden has been scouted by the WWE. And when they put on an event in Perth, he's been invited to do a tryout for the WWE showcase, which is freaking dope. Like, if anyone knows much about the WWE, yeah, imagine, like, he would flip straight into the bloodline if anyone is into wrestling. There's a Samoan, faction that is, like, all family, and they talk about head of the table and their traditions and all that, and he would just fit straight into that, and he looks so fun. He'd be that laugh over the microphone and everything. He's so good. I love
it. Does anybody remember this young man over at the WWE from Champions versus Contenders 2? Grayson Waller is a former player of he's killing it, and he's a former player of Australian Survivor, killing it in WWE. So maybe we've got a second person that will go. So his name is Grayson Waller on what was his name? I forgot what his name was in Survivor. Maddie, right?
Yeah.
Maddie Wahlberg. Yeah.
Wow, unrecognizable.
Yeah, he's killing it. He's doing way better for himself now than what he did in Survivor. We can all agree on that. Apparently, he was a way more strategic player than what we saw in the edit. That's what I've been told by people who played the season with him. So we just didn't see it. But let's say hello to a few people here in the live. We've got Jonathan here saying, hey, guys, won't be able to make the live, so he's not actually here. I'd like to congratulate Alex on voting correctly for the first time, and Valeria for somehow not getting any votes despite what she said at that tribal council. Tion saying, Charles, to me, has to be one of the most screwed over Survivor players. Do we think Charles was under-edited so we wouldn't have as much investment in him as a character with the way he left also? Listen, Charles was definitely screwed by the twist somewhat. I, for some other reason, didn't hate the twist this time as much as I would normally hate on it when I come into Australian Survivor and they're like, only three people get a vote. The rest of you don't matter. You're also immune. I wasn't a fan of that when they did it previously after the merge. But for some other reason, I felt like there was a very fair chance for everybody to compete at it. They knew going into that competition what it was going to be about. And then also, I think having watched Australian Survivor for quite a while now, you have to expect the unexpected. And they do these things with you very consistently. Kahuna, I remember specifically a conversation in this episode, the very first episode of the week, where everybody's like trying to scramble, Ferris is trying to like make his case, Aileen's trying to have a conversation with him, and he's just shooing people away. It's like, nah, can you just go away? We just need to have this conversation without you here. That kind of, you know, like, yes, he was screwed, but he also, I feel like, didn't really take into account that everybody there are people, and they're not chess pieces that you can just move around.
I'm really shocked at like how, I don't know if it's that thing where power goes to people's head or whatever, but as soon as the Titans got in a position where they could choose between the two factions, they just kind of turned into assholes. like
they didn't play the middle at all like we thought they would.
No, like they chose sides and actually got mad at them about it. Like they were like mean and angry. Like they won. They're on the numbers, so now they're gonna be dicks about it. I found that a really fascinating approach to it. Like Winner actually tried to do it kind of strategically, which is so apparent and obvious. But Charles and Valeria just spit venom without any provocation whatsoever. Like the way Charles was like to Aileen, just like, we're not talking to you ever again. Like it's just so, like,
it's very tribal, for lack of a better word. It really does come down to the core of humanity.
So much like you really are resting on a position of power that, again, we mentioned it, Australian Survivor does not let that happen all the time. Like there's twists abound, you know, and you can't cut people off like that to the point where like you're just being assholes. Like it was weird.
Totally agree. Andrea Lee coming in with the $10. Thank you so much, Andrea Lee, and welcome back to the live. We've missed you here on the Nullify Take channel, saying, Kirby, you smashed it. Clean slate, Aileen, desperate. I'm assuming he's saying Aileen is desperate. Vindication, baby. My read on Kirby was correct. And listen, I know Tom is not a big fan of Kirby. I don't know if he's changed his mind in the next week. And Tom, you can correct me if I'm wrong and you've become a fan, I think Kirby is running circles around everybody this season on Survivor. She is by far the best player that we've seen so far at this point of this season. Like, who would you say is better?
Absolutely not. Like, okay, here's my thing.
Well, Mucky would say Kelly.
Well, yeah, let's get Mucky's one first.
If Kirby's such a great player, then why did she take Kelly out of the game? Why didn't she manage that relationship? Because I think it was dumb.
It would be like me trying to manage you if we were to play Survivor together. No, no, no. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
No. So,
sometimes you've got to cut your losses.
I think she lucked out that merge is coming next, which, by the way, the biggest merge of Survivor history, 14 people. But the thing is, though, is that Kelly was a key part of her alliance, and they had three other targets, but they all just wanted to go for Raymond. It's like, normally merges don't happen at 14. You should have kept Kelly as a number, listened to her, and gone for literally one of the three other targets. A good player would have recognized that. I do. I think that's a bad move.
I hear what you're saying in regards to when Kelly said, listen, my go-to is not to go after this person. I don't understand why Raymond suddenly, and this is something that definitely you have got a point. We need to understand, why did Raymond become target number one when there were viable other options on the table? They could have gone for Eileen. Alex at that point didn't have an idol yet in the game. He just came over from the other tribe. So there were definitely viable options there where they could have listened to her. And I think the point where, you know, Kirby didn't want to work, because even a conversation afterwards where they walked away and they were like, listen, I hear you on this, but remember, Raymond tried to go for you. I kept you safe. All those kind of things. All of that was still very good. Where Kirby made the final decision to cut Kelly was when she literally went to the other tribe to tell them all the secrets about the alliance and basically went rogue. At that point, there is no saving this person. I'm sorry. I know, Mucky, that you believe you can play a game like that, but that is sloppy on Kelly's part.
Well, no, because that's also after Kirby and everyone shut her down and Val literally called her delusional and not even thinking. Right?
Doesn't matter. It does not matter.
I mean, I think if you're Kelly in that spot, you realize, you know, Kirby's alliance is not with me. So I would have done the same thing. And because
I know you would have. I feel like Kelly would have played the game like you would have played the game. That was my point to begin with.
The thing is, from Kirby's perspective, you know Ferris's alliance has got two idols.
Yeah.
You don't know merge's next week. She's going into a 4-4 with the other side's got two idols. So I think she put herself in a really bad spot for not originally listening to Kelly, but that's lucky that merge is next.
Yeah, listen, I don't agree. I don't think Kirby's winning this season. Let me just put that out there. Like, you know, I would love for her to go and win this season, because I don't get the hate for Kirby, and maybe Tom can explain to me where that hate comes from. From some of the fans. I'm not saying you're hating on her, Tom. I want to understand this, because to me, up until this point, I agree with Andrea Lee. She's played a pretty flawless game. She's never been on the block. She's never been someone that people are like, I'm going to take her out next. You know, yeah, there's been this battle between her and Ferris, but the numbers have never been there to take her out. Whenever they've gone for that side, it was like, oh, we need to go for Ree, because Ree's got less connections than Kirby. She's playing a really good social game, and she's got some great strategic reads. The execution fell short this episode, this last episode, where they tried to flush the two idols, but it was a correct read to try and flush those two idols while voting out the target that they wanted. I just think strategically, and the way she's playing the game socially, there isn't many people that can compete with her at this point in the game. But I do agree, there's a long game ahead, and potentially her target's going to get too big moving forward, where people will try and take her out. But explain to me the hate, Tom. Where does that come from the online community?
Okay. Well, I'm keeping out of the online stuff, so I don't want any spoilers or anything. But from my perspective, so I think, yeah, she's a great physical player. We've seen her great physical, like her strategies and challenges, a great social player, and she has a great strategic mind for the game. But like we said last week, she just finds a way to like make problems. Like Ferris and Garrick were on her side. She made those enemies for literally no reason. Like there was like why'd you do that? And then like she does get the majority, and you know, Ferris and Eileen get very lucky with that twist and everything. But then like I think everyone in episode 12 played it terribly. Like, you know, Kelly's like, I want to save Raymond. It's like, no, let's all vote out Raymond. It's like, oh, but I don't want to. It's like, no, we're going to do it. It's like, there's literally three other options. Just pick one of them. Exactly. Like, and but then on the other side, like Ferris's group, I'm sorry, Ferris is here. I feel bad like roasting him just as he comes in, but like Ferris's
group. Ferris can take it. Ferris is a good sport.
Yeah, he's a good lad. But Kelly's on the outer. She doesn't want to work with Kirby's alliance anymore. So you go up to Kelly and go, "Hey, Kelly, who would you like to vote out if you could choose?" And then she goes, "Oh, well, I just want one of those Titans gone." Like, "Oh, so would you prefer Winner or would you prefer Valeria?" And it's like, "Winner." I'm like, "Oh, sweet, let's just vote out Winner." Like, you know, he definitely doesn't have an idol. He just played one, and like, there's no way there's like been another idol hidden in the camp. So it's safe to dump 5 votes on Winner, and you take out someone who's actually like properly against you, as opposed to Kelly, who either can work with you or at the very least be a distraction in the future. Like that whole episode, it was just like the rookiest of rookie gameplay, in my opinion. And it was entertaining, but a tough watch at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. I do want to read a few more comments coming in here. So Andrew Lee says, "Masterclass survivor lesson for future survivor wannabe players. Playing it safe and sitting at camp like Tobias or Charles will make it significantly less likely you'll be invited back." I feel like it's a bit harsh to compare Tobias, or Tobias, I should say, and Charles. I feel like Tobias really was just sitting at camp. Charles tried to play the game, but again, you know, we probably didn't see a lot of it. That's kind of what I'm thinking there. And maybe Tobias had more to his game as well, but he literally told us he was just sitting at camp. Andrew Lee says, "Another season that you are hoping for, unless you are Jaden or Eden. Survivor players that sit around camp all season wondering why they're not invited back." Okay, so we've also got Christoph all the way from Europe. I can't remember exactly, Christoph, where in Europe you're from. But how can I watch US season after this? I agree, it's going to be tough, because this season has just been really good week in and week out. It has been delivering. Gabe has condolences for Mucky losing his survivor mom this episode. Jaden is a human Labrador, is what he's saying. Jaden's amazing. He's great TV. Chadu does back.
We're
going to
Eshe again this week, which I like.
Welcome, Chadu. Welcome back to the live as well. We've got a few things to go through. Marcus is saying Kirby's strength is her social game. She has this power that pulls people in wanting to work with her despite her strategic decisions. I agree. I do think people are blind to that. Gabe says, exactly. Kirby screwed herself, and lucky it's the earliest merge ever at 14. How do we feel about the merge coming in so early, Kahuna? Do you think that production was desperate to get players like Ferris and Kirby, because we knew that both of them probably wouldn't have made the merge if the game continued on? Do you think they were desperate to get like Mark, Ferris, Kirby all at the merge, because these are all big players all in trouble at this stage in the game?
I think it worked out perfectly for what production would have loved and what they want, but I don't know that they changed it in order to facilitate it, because like, how do you go to a merge earlier when there's like challenges that are specifically for individual versus tribal, like, you know? So I think it was just, you know, the luck of the survivor gods that gave them all the big guns going into this merge, with everyone sort of pointing at each other in a big face-off, like, should we work together because there's worse enemies on the other side? So it's a fascinating sort of point, which I'm sure, like you said, production must be salivating over the thought of what's coming up.
Yeah, welcome also to Aileen in the live as well. It's always good to have the players here. But yeah, a few players I feel like that were definitely sort of starting to get into danger zone heading into this merge. So I'm very excited to see most of these big players make it to the merge. We spoke a little bit about this big clutch. We spoke a little bit about the fact that, you know, some people say Charles maybe got screwed a bit in this episode. But we haven't really spoken about the twist itself that came into this episode. Tom, we know that there sometimes can be non-elimination episodes. We know that sometimes JLP likes to make things interesting at Tribal Council. What did you think of the fact that they, similar to last season, if anybody watched last season, you know, they had a challenge here where somebody could win immunity, but not just immunity, they also would have to play for their vote, which meant that only 3 people had a vote going into Tribal Council. Were you against it, for it? What's your thoughts?
I'm not gonna lie, like, well, first off, when there was only an immunity challenge. I'm like, okay, there's going to be a twist at Tribal.
There were 30 minutes left when they went to Tribal Council of the episode. I checked. I was like, what's going on here? There's 30 minutes left. Something's going on.
And then as soon as he announced the twist, I'm like, oh, surely it's going to be like whoever gets voted out in this episode and then the next episode have to like battle it out to get back in the game or something similar to Baden. Because I'm like, there's no way they're actually going to vote someone out off this twist. Like that is ludicrous. And they did it. And I'm like, oh, see you, Charles. I do feel for him. I agree with what someone said before. They under-edited him to make it like not feel like so controversial. Because imagine if like Ferris, for example, got voted out because of this twist. Like
people would have been rioting.
Oh yeah, yeah. It would have been crazy. So Charles literally not only got screwed over from the twist, but because he got voted out from this twist, he got screwed out of like any chances of a decent edit. And like to be fair, I don't think out of the 24 people here was like anywhere near the most interesting. No offense, Charles. But like it's still rough. Like he definitely would have got a better edit if he didn't get voted out in this spot, I reckon.
Yeah, I totally agree with it. You know, at this point in the episode, it was quite interesting because, you know, Kahuna, there's some people saying that they're convinced Valeria's winning the season due to her edit. I forgot to mention it here and I can definitely see it. She's getting a very solid edit. She's constantly being shown by the show. So there's a good chance, at least, because in Australian Survivor, if they give you more airtime, you know, there's a chance you're going to go pretty deep. We all know that they're very selective with who they give camera and screen time on the show. So there's definitely a chance that she could win. But in this moment here, she nearly shot herself in the foot, Kahuna, because she had this very confrontational conversation with Aileen and Ferris in the game at this point, which potentially could have made her a target. They ultimately decided to keep and go for Charles. But when I try to like throw a bit of a wrench to the works here, like he tried to get them to vote for him in one of the most bizarre moves at Tribal Council, it just feels like Winner lost it a little bit here. He could have hung on. He could have kept that idol for the next round in this moment, but he tried to save an alliance member here, and it sort of backfired. What did you think of Winner trying to get the votes on him?
I mean, I appreciate the effort, but like, I don't think it. Like, I thought it was completely see-through. So transparent what he was doing, and like obviously trying to draw votes his way. It's 101. I don't think you can kind of just insult people into voting for you, because unless that's what Valeria was trying to do as well, apparently. I'm not sure. Like the way she said to Ferris, like, you're a horrible leader, nobody trusts you. Like it was just weird the way they and the fact that
it's very personal.
Like, it was personal, and like that's why I don't think Valeria King is not she's not winning to me, because she's pissing people off in the game. She doesn't have the connections like that go deep, because she just lost Charles. She's with Winner. She's got Mark, but she doesn't have her 3, 4, 5 strong or whatever the case may be. She's not. I don't think she's. I think she gets a lot of edit because she's. Looks the way that she looks. She looks.
Maybe
good
she's a final tribal council zero vote.
Yeah,
maybe she gets there and gets zero votes in the end.
Because something about Val as well, and I was talking about this with I think it was Andre today, actually, we were just having a chat early in the afternoon. But what has Val done herself to put her in a good spot? She's always lucked out because Mark was working with Majority. He really wanted to bring in Viola and Val into that. And then it didn't matter if it was Val or
it's dangerous territory, Maki. Are you trying to say if a man and a woman are in an alliance,
the man is the only one who could direct the vote? No, I'm not, because even if Rogue ended up in the same position as Val on the new Titans tribe, Rogue is perfectly safe, right? It doesn't matter which three Titans are there. They've got the main alliance of Ferris and the main alliance of Kirby, right? Going head to head, right? So Val hasn't actually done anything to put herself in a really powerful spot. Has sort of always been by luck, if that makes sense. So that's why I don't think she's
going to social, I guess. By befriending Kirby and picking that way, she's the one that brought in Charles and Winner, right? She was the alliance to Kirby. So she's done that, I guess. She did the cooking, you know.
Yeah.
we got that.
Wow, Kahuna.
There's always going to be Ferris against Kirby, though. This thing's always going to be
the edit showed us that, man. You know what she blew Kirby's move. You're right, Chris. It was smart of Kirby to try to flush the idols, And I feel like Valeria, the way she like, she blew it up. She made it too obvious that there was no way Kelly wasn't going home.
Up until that point, like, you know, Ferris was sitting up like a meerkat and his eyes were massive. And you could just see him like relax after Valeria went so hard in on Kelly that it was so obvious that it was never going to go on them. So I feel like, you know, Ferris obviously made the right move here, but everybody else played it perfectly up until that point, and the paranoia was real. But you're right. I just, the more I look at it, I think Val's edit is showing us why she's not winning. Her edit isn't as perfect as Chadu thinks it is at this point. But Chadu, let's see who's right by the end of the season.
At least she's relevant. Yeah, I feel like that move from Kirby was silly. Like, yeah, let's try and flush two idols and vote someone else out with our four votes in a 9-person tribe. Like, how do you think that's actually going to happen? I reckon it was because the edit has clearly shown, like, all of Kirby's moves, whether they're actually good or not. They're trying to show them in a positive light. And I feel like, I think it was all manufactured that that Ferris was actually going to, like, potentially play the idol. I think that was all, like, editing and stuff, you know.
So what does that mean for Ferris's future in the game? Like, if they're willing to make Ferris look paranoid, willing to make him look that he doesn't have good reads in the game, are we discounting Ferris as someone that now can win the game? Because he didn't look good in this episode until the point where Valeria made it blatantly obvious that he's not going home. The edit wanted us to show us that it was working. So what does that say of Ferris's edit at this stage?
I think they're trying to trick us. Like, at first, a few weeks back, we sort of thought, yeah, Ferris is going to win the war. And then bam, it's a switcheroo and Garrick gets voted out. And then now it's like, oh, like Kirby's like on top. She's queen and Ferris is in the dirt. And like, I'm sure a lot of people are thinking, oh, now Kirby's going to win this war. And then I bet you, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. They're going to switch it around. And either Kirby or one of her big alliance members, like Scott, is going to go. And it's just going to be like, you think this person's about to win and then the other person wins kind of thing. Yeah.
Right, so no one's getting the perfect edit this season. They want us to keep guessing until the end, which is great if that is what they're doing, because in the past, Australian Survivor has been guilty of making it too obvious who's going to win. So I would love this change in direction if that is the case, and it's not the obvious
person. There's no obvious one now, right?
Is there? I don't think so. No, I don't think so.
I mean, Chadu thinks Val, but we just all shat on that. So,
Chadu, like, we love you regardless, mate. Like, have your takes. You know, all takes are welcome here. But we're working through this because I came into this very hot on Kirby, and the boys have kind of convinced me. Like, Kirby's not perfect either. There is definitely flaws. I just think that the truth is somewhere in the middle with her game. Like, I don't think that she's as bad as Tom thinks she is. And I don't think that she's as good maybe as I think she is. But she's somewhere in the middle of the two of us, at least, Gona. What's your thoughts on Kirby?
Kirby is, like, I'm going to be hyperbolic here, right? Like, extreme example, right? But LeBron James is the best player in he's old now. But LeBron James, right, level of play, but has a very bad game for LeBron James, can still have a good game, right? He's not playing up to his level. I think she's a phenomenal player who has made some bad moves, but is still coming out ahead because she is so good, right?
I think
her margin of error is gigantic, and she's using most of it, right? Because she's so well socially connected. She's got all these things that she can do. She's throwing freaking haymakers everywhere. They're missing, but it just shows how set she is in her position and how well she's insulated herself, and that's getting thinner and thinner as the game goes on, because
100% they're running out of people.
Yeah, absolutely. But she was so well protected that she could throw crazy shots that completely miss, but she's still so in such a good spot because she's great at it, even though she's taking bad shots, you know.
Totally agree. Chadu's a bit annoyed here at I think Tom for saying that we shat on I don't know who said we shat on his view, but he's like, okay, Mr. Know-it-all. Who do you think is going to win, Kahuna?
I was the one who said last week that Val was going to win, but I'm not sure about that anymore because
It's clearly Alex. It's clearly Alex. There's nothing but upside for Alex at this point.
Sneaky Steve. No,
it's coming from Redemption Island.
Yeah, 100%. But in the next time on Survivor, they were like, and who will be sole survivor? And then it literally is like on a picture of Val. I'm like,
yeah, I saw. It's like, surely it's not that obvious. I saw it as well.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, come on now. I mean, old, if this was Blood versus Water, she would be the winner.
100%, because Blood versus Water was obvious from episode 3 or 4 that Mark was going to win that season. Spoiler alert for any of those people that have not watched that season. But it's great. It's great that we're going back and forth here. Let's talk a little bit about episode 11. And Mucky, one of your favorite players left in the game, Jaden, his strategy to lay low, a strategy that I believe would be difficult for you to sort of emulate yourself if you were out there to go play the game. But can you at least appreciate how he plays the game? And is there some similarities to how he plays the game to like a Fabio almost? That you know, won over in the US.
I love Jaden so much. I think he's one of my different top 5 favorite players
of all time.
Season. This season. I mean, maybe
next time we talk about the GOATs of Survivor, he's going to make a nomination for Jaden. I can just see it. It's Mucky's working his way up to it.
Yeah, no, I love Jaden so much. Every scene he has a confession and he's talking. I just love it. So much, you know, and all the challenges as well, from the basketball to literally holding Winner and Raymond
and laughing
as well, and laughing the whole time. Like, I love Jaden so much. I never want this man to get voted out. Like, I can't think of a reason to vote him out, which is why I think he's making it to the end. But then if someone like that's in the end, you have to vote for him to win.
Mm.
I'm secretly hoping that like he goes in going, I am a massive, massive presence. I stand out so much. I'm going to play it dumb. I'm going to do no strategy. I'm going to be no threat whatsoever. I'm the laughing Labrador and I'm going to just lift stuff and make people happy. And
I'm
no
the one who has
I'm
to ask. I'm the one at the tribal council. That needs to ask 3 or 4 times at the tribal council. So what is the actual plan? Who am I voting for?
It's all a mark. It's all 4D chess. That's what I'm hoping, but it's not true, unfortunately. I think with Jaden, what you see is what you get.
Love him though. Great, great character this season. Someone that has brought, you know, tons of entertainment already, especially in the challenges where he really does shine. We do also in this episode get them quite a bit at the Rebels camp talking about the fact that Mark thinks he's back in with the gang. He's back in with the middle-aged mafia. But Caroline goes from Tom talking about this master plan of what she's got for Mark long-term and how she wants to embrace him long-term and do things. And then suddenly she's in the same episode, just flicks a switch. And suddenly she's like, he's dead to me. Like, and she goes like full, like he's, we're going to bury him. If someone turns against the mafia, we're voting him out. Did we miss an episode or something? Like, how did that happen from one confessional to the next confessional? Her just turning her back on him so quickly.
To be fair, I don't really know. Like, there aren't many options on that tribe, like, in terms of who to target. Cause I think like they need to keep Ree as a bargaining chip to build an alliance with Kirby. Because, I mean, going into the merge, I'm pretty sure what Titans are down on numbers, or is it? I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it must be, yeah.
Yeah. All I know is like both tribes are so fractured. I honestly don't know. Like, I can't tell you who the majority is going to be. But yeah, I just think she didn't have many other options. And to be honest, it's the right move getting rid of Mark, because she probably realized like Mark's just going to tell Val everything, and then Val and Mark are going to hate me, and then I'm going to definitely be in a minority, and I'm going to get picked off with Eden and Kitty. Yeah.
So I just double checked. I just double checked 7-7 going into the merge. So it's actually right down the middle, but it's not a solid 7, no matter how you look at it, because we have Annie here in the live. Hello, Annie. Welcome to the live. Saying, what's your thoughts when Kelly disclosed information to Kitty about Kirby's alliance? I mean, listen, it clearly shows that there's fractures, right? And that Valeria, for instance, was, I think, the star of that again, like just trying to find out information, and it's almost like the Russian hitman, you know, trying to make sure she gets the names of who betrayed V, you know, in the game. And I think that is a big part of her story arc, is taking revenge. So for me personally, I do think you're right, Tom. Going into the merge, she's trying to look at the long game, getting Ree on her side does make a lot of sense, right? Because then she can potentially ingratiate herself with the Kirby Alliance. The only problem that Caroline is not accounting for here in this game, Kahuna, is that, you know, Ree's close to Kirby. Kirby might bring it in, but Valeria is now also close to Kirby. And as soon as Valeria finds out what Caroline did, there's no way that the Middle Age Mafia would be able to work with that side of the Alliance long term. So they kind of screwed themselves really at this stage in the game. I feel like it'd be very surprising if someone from the Middle Age Mafia can actually get the numbers after the merge to win this game. Would you agree with that?
Yes and no, only because the way I look at the chessboard at the moment and why it's so freaking fascinating is that, like you mentioned, it's 7 and 7, but they're not a solid seven, is that there seems to be these little factions of groups of threes, or like 2, 3, you know, there's no big group that can actually come in and dominate. There's going to be a lot of movement and fluidity and trying to build up numbers from little groups. And I find that really interesting. Like, you've got the Middle Age Mafia, you got Kirby's crew, you got Ferez's crew, and then you've kind of got some in-betweeners that are like a Jaden or whatever, but who's with the Middle Age Mafia, but will he be going forward? Who knows? There's so much kind of...
I think Jaden will go wherever the wind blows.
That's... Which I'm really surprised. Like, this has been underplayed, but for Caroline and that to actually have Jaden as a number at the moment is pretty fascinating. Like, I don't see how that relationship exists between the Middle Age Mafia and Jaden when last week, like, Jaden, I can tell because... he looks like me, likes his food, and she was taking it away. Like, you know, the one person. And for some reason, he's been with them solid. Like, I feel like he is a floater that could easily be pulled in any direction for the next person that says something. Well, actually just has to say the last thing to him, and he'll do that.
Jaden Diaz Twine, anybody but me, is the strategy that he is following at the moment, and it's working for him in the game. Mark, welcome to the live, asking, did Mucky clean up for Aileen?
Oh, gosh. It's not the first time Mark's, Mark's taken a shot at me this week.
That sunburn over in New Zealand is a real thing there, Mucky.
Actually, my face is not red this time.
He's become immune to it. Looking at that reaction, it looked like he did. And Aileen's still here in the live as well. But yeah, so very fascinating game at the moment. The way that the numbers are falling and all sort of falling out and going into the merge, I think it's going to make for a very, very fascinating sort of merge section of the game. I do want to talk about the immunity challenge here for this episode. Since Aileen is still in the chat as well, we're going to be talking about her quite a bit here, but, you know, what a clutch win. We spoke about Jaden getting the clutch win with shot after shot previously when he had to shoot the hoops. Now we've got Aileen knowing she's in danger. They can't play the idol on both of them. Chances are they'll split the vote because they believe that Firas has got an idol in his pocket. She needs to come up here and win this thing. And they had this big pyramid that they had to go on with a rope. They had to keep climbing up, which made it more and more difficult with ultimately, you know, Aileen going head-to-head with a beast and Kitty on the other side and Ree, who's also very, very strong physically. Mucky, I know that you keep your eye on Aileen all the time in any case, but how proud were you of your survivor girlfriend going out there and winning this specific challenge? You know, obviously proving that, you know, it's all about what you've got in here. It's all about the heart when you're going out there and your life is in danger.
Yeah, it just really sucks. It was awful and non-elimination, right? Like, it was so much hard work, so much determination. Like, I really like non-eliminations. I do. But, yeah, it just sucks that with all the effort that Aileen had put in, like, you can see how emotional she was as well afterwards. And it's all just for a non-elim, right? And so...
Hey, Mucky, did it make you emotional seeing someone you care about so fondly emotional?
Oh, look, I'm an emotional guy, man. With my hay fever, I shed many tears, all right?
I feel bad for Aileen and shadowing what you said, Mucky, just like giving it all and basically showing that she is like a massive threat physically for the individual portion, like for nothing. Like obviously she thought, I need to win this to save myself. And she, you know, she did that, good job. But actually she didn't need to win it at all. So it's just like, I feel bad that she had to basically show her cards and show that she's...
Because of the twist.
Yes. So now everyone knows she's an endurance beast.
But that's results focused, right? Like you got to say in the moment, you don't know what's going to happen at tribal council.
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah,
after the fact, I was like, she did awesome. She won that. She did the the elimination challenge at Tribal the next day, and then with the I was like, what a week. I didn't even think it didn't even matter. I was like, kudos, you know.
Yeah.
Well, so do you think that she threw it in the next one where she had to go head to head with Kitty in the water, and Kitty just threw it to the side just to like show people she's not that much of a threat? Like she just threw it to make the target go down a little bit.
Well, like I say,
Kitty would do that to me.
Let's not forget, last year, Sneaky Steve beat Liz, a Olympian, in a similar like water-based challenge, and he did it without his glasses, right? So I think Eileen was intentionally throwing that because she was like, hang on, everyone's seen how good at sandbags I'm throwing, everyone's seen how good I'm on leading or holding onto a rope, so now I got to tone it down a bit. It's all in the strategy, guys. It's all in the strategy. Yeah. Sneaky Steve was voted out like the next episode after that because he showed much of his.
It's all about balance, is what you're saying. It's all about balance. Yes. As soon as Alex came into the tribe, she knew there was another option. She threw the next one, so she's not as big of a threat now heading into the merge. Yeah. But no, listen, I just wanted to say great performance there. This looked definitely hard. It's the ones that I wouldn't want to do. I thought she had a very interesting strategy, and the camera kept like going back to like a full, like, you know, facial shot of her standing there when clearly at the end she had her arm locked in because she could only use one arm. So she actually used some of her shoulder power more than her grip to try and keep herself up there, which was she was the only one who did that, where the others were all holding on with this one hand, one grip that they needed to hold up there. So it clearly worked out. She used the brains. She wasn't just physically doing well here, but also had a strategy going into this, which I definitely noted. Well done to Eileen and actually winning that one there. They do have, obviously, Tribal Council at this point. And this is where things get very messy and hard to follow. And again, I'm surprised that, you know, throughout all of the scrambling that happened there, Tom, at no point did we see Mark actually sort of take note of that and be like, the edit probably didn't show us what he noticed, but it seemed like there was a lot of conversations happening there. The conversations consistently happened, but the one thing that Mark did well was he inserted himself like Survivor 101 in every single conversation. Because if someone walks off to the well, you want to be a part of that, right, Tom? So at least we can give him credit for the fact that he made it very difficult for them to plot.
Yeah, well, I actually, I remember like while the challenge was happening, my cold, dead heart actually felt for Mucky, and I was like, you know what? I want Eileen to win, so I don't want to see her get voted out and break Mucky's heart. But then, as soon as we got to like after the challenge, and they were at on Rebels Beach, Rebels Beach,
yeah, Rebels Beach,
and it was clearly between Mark and Alex. I'm like, actually, no. I prefer if Eileen lost that. Never mind. Wow. But it didn't matter anyway. Like, so I didn't want Alex gone. You know, Alex is one of my favorites.
That's so cool. Tom just won all the boys. He just wants like an all meat chilled alliance at the end. You know, listen, Tom, you keep doing these faces, but I'm not putting words in your mouth. You're the one that consistently proves the stereotype about you and the fact that you prefer male Survivor players. You keep proving us right.
I agree, Dave.
I would look if I could pick who I want out most at the moment. Okay, yes, the first one would be Caroline, but then after that it would be Winner because he's like he's just like he speaks like monotone the whole time and he thinks he's so good. I'm playing this for the sushi boy. Like, no, sit down. Like, that's a stupid shirt, first of all. Like, and it likes, I don't know, I don't like Winner at all. I know my dad can't stand Winner. And then they're probably the only two I actually kind of want. Like,
yeah, because the next one would have put a female player. So he's just like, I'm not going to go down there. This is probably like a Kirby or something.
And then the next five women.
I'm trying to think who else is in the game. Thank you very much. So I'm going to leave it. Or maybe like, actually, I think Mark's, I'm fine with Mark going, to be honest. I'm cool with that.
Yeah, you know, Chadud with the real hard hitting question here for Mucky, saying, Mucky, will Eileen ever be better than Sneaky Steve?
It's a hard one, but Sneaky Steve truly has my heart, right? You know, way back from 2018, you know, all the way to now, I was the only one happy to see him come back as well for Heroes versus Villains. And so I love Sneaky Steve, and it is a fantasy, it is a dream of mine to work one of his takeaway shifts with him as we're on the scooter, I'm holding on to him and he drives around it.
Speaking of Sneaky Steve.
Don't tell Sneaky Steve this. He'll put you to work. He'll let you use his Deliveroo app get you to do all the deliveries while he sits at home. Like, you know.
Serving Sneaky Steve? Like, tell me a better job. Yeah, or tell me a better volunteer job. Honestly.
I'm going to make it awkward and put it to the three white guys. So Sneaky Steve, and then Benjamin, and I forget the other one's name, but then Eileen got called a snake and untrustworthy again this season. Four from four for Asians on Australian Survivor just being called sneaky, snakes, traitor.
I feel like we're, and again, I could be wrong here, like this is it's a touchy subject and some people may not agree with me on this, and I'm not saying I'm right? But I feel like we're more hyper-focused when an Asian player gets called that than what we are when a lot of other players get called similar things in the game, right? So I don't think that they're the only players being called sneaky or snaky behavior or things like that. I feel like that is also things that are being called of other players that are not trustworthy in the game. But we're very hyper-focused on it because obviously Asian players in Australian Survivor, they're, most of the time when they play the game, they're a minority. And because of that, I think that there's just more of a hyper-focus on that. That's my take on it. I mean, Ferris was called a lot of things in the last couple of episodes as well, you know, like slimy car salesman and all this kind of different stuff. So, and I could be wrong, but I feel like that's a very online Reddit take because of the fact that it's so focused on that. Anybody else got thoughts on that? Because, I mean, listen, I'm the white guy talking about it. So, but I feel like... She's not the first person, or, you know, Ben's not the first person to be called a snake and survivor or sneaky, you know?
I was going to say as a non-white guy, obviously. no, I think like most of the time they do try and show it like, you know, someone gets called sneaky and like it, they kind of show reasons why it's valid, but I think Eileen hasn't done anything that's sneaky. I just think the majority
a bit sneaky with like getting the idol,
in front of all of them. Making it with them and they're like, he's got an idol.
It's pretty weird. It was a weird move, but I think like the majority on Eileen's tribe were just such wankers about being like the majority. Like the way they spoke to the minority was just like, I wasn't going, oh yeah, Eileen's sneaky. I'm going, oh geez, you guys suck. Like that's why I was fine with Charles going, because the way they acted in that episode, like get him out of there, you know?
Yeah. So all we can say is, Char dude, there is still a chance for you to be the superior Charles when you get onto Survivor, right? There is still a chance for you if you get out there.
Something as well, like when it comes to that twist, I think a reason why a lot of people online seem to really enjoy the twist is because of the cocky nature of the majority. Like, but I do see a chance though where that twist does not work out the way it does, right? I think people only like the twist because everyone's rooting for Ferris, Eileen, and they got it, and it was 100%. Such like a massive flip. And so I think that's why everyone liked it.
Ridiculous.
But it's actually really low.
Yeah,
it had to be exact two of them. And they split.
I think that's why I'm not as upset when I, because normally you guys know me, I'm a Survivor purist. I like for the format to be pure. I like the twists and stuff, but I don't like, for instance, having advantages and that, but I don't like messing with the format of Tribal Council. So normally I would hate it, but I think because it was so unlikely for both of them to win, I was okay with them winning it in that moment and taking control, because they've been out of control, and also because the edit made the majority alliance seem very unlikable throughout the whole episode. So I was like, yeah, go get the minority alliance. I was like totally on board with it. So that shows you the magic of editing, and the clips that they do choose to show on the show definitely had an effect on me as a viewer to be okay with what happened. But more importantly, Mucky, you've been raving about rock twists for such a long time, and you love your rocks, like, you know. What did you think of this, that Australian Survivor stole one of your ideas, where bringing rocks into a tribal council, and they didn't give you any credit for it, because they had to end up voting for players to go over to the Titan Stripe and they would draw rocks to see who would ultimately be the person to go. Did you like the fact that we saw an appearance of some rocks here on Survivor?
Look, I've never smoked a weed, but I assume this is what it feels like to be high. I was so happy. I was in like dreamland the entire time that like they finally put rocks into Survivor. like they can't, no one will force a rock draw to happen. So production forces them to draw rocks, right? Like I absolutely loved it. And also what a great outcome for Alex as well. I think I think him going to the Titans, like, made that tribe so much more interesting as well. Because if Rihanna goes, it's just what, like 6-3 again?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, but since Alex is there, like, completely opened the Titans game.
It was good for us as viewers to see Alex go over. I mean, I couldn't wait to see him and Kelly be reunited because I knew that would be brilliant TV to see them both on the same tribe. But more so importantly, because I knew the Minority Alliance needed the numbers. So I was very happy for him to go over rather than Ree. I thought it was the right move by Caroline to say they shouldn't send Mark over, because if Mark goes over, he controls the narrative of what happened to Viola. And obviously, that is something that they've tried to prevent. But I think the more and more Caroline and the middle-aged mafia are scrambling to try and control the narrative, the more and more they should be realizing to themselves they made life difficult for themselves for no freaking reason. They were in a good spot. I still think the Viola move was too premature to make. And now they've got problems on the other side where they probably don't have numbers, where they really need for Valeria and Winner to come back over to their side and work with the Titans for them to have any shot in this game, because they don't know any of the other players. And I think even Ree, who's been with them, Alex, who's been with them, they've been made to feel like second-class citizens for such a long time in that tribe that there's no way they're working with the middle-aged mafia when they get to a merge situation. So it's going to be interesting to see how that is going to play out. But ultimately, Alex is going to be the one who does draw the blue rock. He does go over to the Titans tribe. We get him waking up there the next morning. And this is where Alex is on his best behavior, Tom, because, you know, there's this whole scene about Kelly's son's birthday. They've got the flowers. They put it into the water. But not only is it Kelly's son's birthday, it's also her dog's birthday at the exact same moment, Tom. It's always going to be a little bit extra when it comes to Kelly. What did you think of this scene? And how do you feel Alex handled the situation being back on the same beach as her?
I thought it was great. Like, he put next to no effort in his voice. Like, oh, that's great, Kel. Oh, yeah. But I mean, Alex was great, but Ferris was the highlight. Like, when they were all going down with two flowers in their hands, and Ferris in the background, and he has to, like, turn away and like sort of cover a laugh. That is just like, what would you do, Chris, if you had a Kelly on your tribe for that long, like half the game?
Like, listen, I think this is the problem, right? Is that Chris, who is well fed and, you know, sleeping well every night, no problem. I deal with people on a day-to-day basis, being in people management and having to manage a lot of people. You get all personality types, so you got to adapt to the person that you're talking to. Chris on Survivor, what's this, like day 28, day 30 or something? Haven't been fed for that long. I've been sleeping on rocks. You know, I think it would be very difficult to deal with. So I take my hat off to the players that had to put up with it for as long as they did while they were there. I do think it would be a very difficult thing to do. And we don't always appreciate that, sitting in the comfort of our home while we're drinking some nice Coke Zero or Coke or whatever you've got, with some, you know, Pringles, and you're relaxing watching the show. We don't realize how hard it is to deal with that type of personality when we're out there. And it would be something that would be difficult for anyone to deal with. So I take my hat off to Alex for keeping it calm, not giving everything away in this early stages of the merge with him being back, because he knew coming into this that he didn't want to be the dick immediately, where everybody's like, easy target, let's vote this guy out, even though he's new in the tribe. I thought he played that perfectly. Kahuna, what would your thoughts have been having someone like a Kelly around you? Everything's this big deal when she's there. And especially with Alex, I feel like she really enjoyed just like poking at him the whole time. Like, she would go annoy him while he's laying in the hammock.
I think I'd vacillate between just like staring at her completely. Like, I'd just be like this, like just completely shocked at what's coming out of her mouth. And then there'd be other times where I'd be like adding fuel to the fire and just like egging her on and go, go Kelly, and just laugh and watch. Like, I would wind her up so much and then just sit back and watch the chaos, especially out there. You'd be so bored. But she would be a lot, man. She would be so hard. Like, her, even her freaking exit, like her speed, like, she's so over the top. Like, someone mentioned, was it the Rebel Kel?
Yeah, the Rebel Kel song that she posted.
Yeah. Holy crap. Yeah, Marcus said it.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Has anyone listened to Rebel Kel on Kel?
No.
Yeah, like, she is what we saw on TV is her. Like, it was 100% authentic her. And I do like it when it's on a screen in my lounge room.
Like I think Kelly, and I'll just put this out there. I think Kelly's probably she's a sweetheart, probably outside of the game, really nice and all that, but she's full on. I know people like that. Like, she's full on. So you're going to have to, like, I don't know if I could be on a beach when I'm not eating. Like, in my normal life, I could deal with any situation thrown at me. On a beach where I'm not eating, where I'm not sleeping, where people are trying to backstab me and I'm paranoid all the time, the last thing you need is that type of personality. But that is what production needs. Like, production, please, can we get Kelly 2.0 next season? Keep giving us these kind of characters, because it creates for frustrating, great scenarios to play out on our screens. They're always my favorite characters, like the Kellys, the Philip Shepherds, the Coach Wades. Those are the people that I really enjoy when they're on the show, even like a Sneaky Steve. But, you know, Sneaky Steve looks like a very normal player in comparison to, like, a Kelly out there. Tom, you look like you wanted to say something.
I was going to say, can we not get Kelly next season? Because I'd like to be season, and I don't want a Kelly. Because she, like, my mom's just like that. Like, to be honest, like, just so over the top. And, like, I couldn't deal with one of the... I want to get away from that. I want to have a nice holiday in Samoa, you know?
We've got the next Kelly on this podcast. All we need is for Mucky to be casted next season. And he'll bring Chaos Mucky to the channel to the show if he does get casted on there. So you know, Mucky and Tom is a dynamic duo for Survivor next season. I think would be a lot of fun for myself and Kahuna to watch.
I would be carrying Tom, because he's got no social skills. He'd be like, can we get the Meatpacker alliance going? So I'd have to
carry him. You can only carry him for one episode though, Mucky. Everyone said you can only carry him for one episode.
I was gonna
I'll slingshot Tom to the end.
If I'm in the Meatpack Alliance, I guess I'm a T-bone steak without the steak. I'm just the T-bone.
You're the you're like the bits that get like chopped off.
The gristle.
Yeah.
Wow.
As far as characters go,
Gabe does not even like Tom all that much, but even he thinks that Mucky's best shot is to play with Tom, so he's not a first vote. See? Yeah. Or does he mean this? Because Tom's the first vote. Is he saying you're the first vote, Tom? Or does he mean that you would help Mucky in the game get deeper? Because that's how I read it at first.
Tom's social game is like a vacuum cleaner. It sucks, right?
I suck everyone else up, and then I'm the only one left, so I win by default.
No, that's a bit too far there, Tom. You can't go around sucking.
Okay, kids, calm down.
I just wanted to ask a question, because I've been playing it up in my head. As far as big characters go, what is a better exit speech? To go, dirty dogs, and that's it? With Garrick, or to go, I'm a psychologist.
Oh, she definitely has to be. Five.
No, Garrick.
This was the best Garrick. Ever.
No, I love Garrick's dirty dogs.
And she forgot the fire. She forgot a torch.
Forgot to like wait for it to be snuffed. Got lost on the way out. Like, I don't think there will ever be a better exit in Survivor than Kelly's exit from Tribal Council, and everybody just. In amazement, looking at her like, okay, you're a psychologist. Okay, you're 50. We never thought you were 32 in any case. So thanks for letting us know you're 55. Thanks for letting us know you're a psychiatrist.
They knew, right? She wasn't doing the secret lawyer thing with being a psychologist, was she?
No, she said from the start she wasn't going to let them know.
Yeah, so what the hell was that?
Yeah, she told them she wasn't going to let them know about the psychiatrist.
Oh, she was a counselor or something, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. She said something. I didn't pay attention to what a fake story was.
Because she said
she was 55. Do you guys reckon she said she was in her 30s or something stupid?
I don't know.
Where did that come from?
I'm in my 30s. I did a lot of
You know where it came from? She was like, okay, this is it. This is my moment. Come on, Kelly. We're going to give the best speech. Because she even said, I want to say something to everyone. And then she went, I'm a psychologist. Like, she just like froze and just like said hi. Like, it was just,
and everybody started clapping for her at the end. And like, I think Aileen was the only one who didn't fake it. Like, when I looked at it, she just didn't clap at all. She's like, no, I'm not faking this.
That's the best.
she will be. Can we talk a little bit about Raymond helping Kelly look for the idol, and the scene where she's like, yeah, yeah, go look for the idol, and then immediately when she leaves, he just goes and sits down. Like, Kelly threw her game out there for Raymond, and Raymond did nothing. He did less than nothing for Kelly in this moment to try and save her in the game, which I think, again, just shows that even though you're being hard, like, people are being hard here on Kirby for not wanting to work with Kelly, Ferris and them didn't bring her in as a number either. They were still like, no, we don't want this person in our alliance. Like, she is not worth the number. We would rather go down with numbers into the merge because of how chaotic she is and how we can't control her. Like, she just seemed like, I mean, let's not forget, the reason that Alex is still in the game is because she went rogue and did her own thing, and that's why Tobias went home. Like, she is not a credible number in the game and never was. She wanted to play her own game throughout.
Also at the same time, when it comes to Ferris not making the move, I can at least give him some credit where at least he knows he's got two idols on his side going into this 4v4, right? Kirby's got no idols, and, you know, she's aware that he's at least... Oh, yeah, but I'm talking about if they don't merge next episode, right? And it's still just... And they go back to tribal. Kirby's going against 4v4, which has got no idols, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like, at least with Ferris, he's at least got a way out, a way to make...
Yeah, I'm not trying to say one's gameplay is more superior than the other. I'm just saying both of them recognize that she's a lost cause at this point. Chowdhury says that she thought she was playing traitors, and when you're voted out, you have to do the reveal, the surprise at the end.
That says even more about how grading she must have been, because you're right, like, the fact that they go 4-4 and you need to flip her, and she was I'm a free A, I'm not in your alliance anymore, and Ferris and they're like, nah, like,
we'll leave it, we'll still take the risk.
You're like, it's okay, we're good, thank you.
What did you guys think of the twist with the feast or go search for an idol? Did you like this twist coming in here where a lot of them had the opportunity to eat without having to earn it? I personally think they should have made it, you can play for the feast, at least make some risk to try and go for the feast, and not everybody just get it. But it did create a great moment with everybody strategizing, Kelly sinking her own game at this point, Valeria figuring out that Kitty and Caroline is not being honest, her talking about the fact that she can see that Mark, like, the life is out of him, like, he looks like he's a dead man walking in the game, and really just sort of, you know, I think setting up this next stage where Valeria and Mark is going to take revenge on the middle-aged mafia for Viola, that all is sort of started with the feast, which I thought was really, really good. But then they also had people taking the risk of going back to camp to go and find an idol. You know, Tom, what was your thoughts about this? Did you like this twist in the game?
Yeah, I thought it was a fun twist. Like, it was weird having like three, like, we've had a pretty tame season so far, and then we have a 1 week with like a twist per episode that's like brand new. But I like this one. I thought it was great. I can see all the comments like, maybe there's another shelter and all that kind of stuff. Like, the I love how anticlimactic and boring the rebels like idol search was, and then the Titans one was just gold.
It was gold. I mean, and again, it just shows why Ferris, regardless on, like, Ferris is a great showman first and foremost. Like, you know, he found that idol immediately, showing that he's savvy, and then trying everything to get Alex to find this idol, and both Aileen and Alex not finding it. Again, Kuna, is this not proof to the Survivor fandom out there, the people that keep saying, rigged, this show is rigged for Ferris, they're just planting idols for him to easily find it, Ben Driebergen, clearly it was rigged. I mean, people forget Ben Driebergen needed to go onto Survivor Winners at War and show people how to find idols. Clearly it's a skill. Clearly it's something that some people have and other people just don't have.
He's an idol hunter.
Can we put that whole conspiracy theory now to bed, that they're planting idols for people? No, the people who keep finding them are the ones that's got the skill to find them.
The most persistent, the ones that work the hardest at it, the ones that, they just kind of sniff them out, and they, like, you heard someone, was it Ferris? No, someone in an episode was like, oh, Raymond, when he was telling Kelly, he was like, oh, it's usually in a place that kind of looks like they put it in these kind of spots, in the fork of a tree. Like, you know, there is actual, you know, data that you can kind of go off of. But Ferris, like, he found it and he let them find it, made a strategic choice. He said, it's a public idol. I don't want that stink on me. Like, let Alex be, you know, the it actually worked. Alex will become a bit more of a threat than Ferris, I think, potentially by having that idol around his neck. But Ferris, does it count as a confessional when Ferris just gives eye rolls to the camera? Like, he was in the confessional and he was just like, when they couldn't find it, like, that was one of the best confessionals. He's saying nothing at all. He's just like, yeah, going, wow. Like,
it's an appearance. I don't know. Yeah, it's an appearance at least. Yeah, Mucky, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, how great was it as well? I feel like it's quite underrated and not many people are talking about it, but how he actively chose to get Alex to find the idol and not Eileen. You know, like, coming off making that huge move against Charles, they're already seen as like a bit of a duo. They're the underdogs in the tribe. They're probably like two of the biggest threats on that tribe as well, alongside Kirby. So by letting Alex find the idol, it at least puts some heat away from
and
them.
And then, by the way, he told Kirby Alex found it to try to build, like, again, trying to bridge something. Mm. Like, if he knows he's going into merge and he needs numbers, Kirby's going to, like,
information is
that,
powerful.
Yeah, so he's still trying to build a bridge with Kirby after all this time, like, all this war. Mm. They got in the Kelly boat together. Maybe he's seeing, like, there's something coming up on the other side here that we need to be together. And he's sharing information about Alex to try to build something back again. I don't know.
I feel like the rift between Kirby and Ferris was due to Garrick just being so emotional about the fact that Kirby did her own thing in episode one and he couldn't get over it, right? Where I don't think that Ferris is someone that would hold that grudge as long. Like, I do think he is someone that is more than willing. He understands, like, he's been talking in all of these episodes. He's been talking, we need the numbers. You're not thinking strategically about the merge. Like, he's been sort of preaching that. Even in the episode where both him and Eileen were in trouble going into that tribal council, he was pitching numbers and no one was listening to him. So I feel like he's more open-minded, and without Garrick being there, I think there is less of this wedge between the two of them. The problem is that I think Kirby's a smart player, and she knows that whenever Ferris gets the opportunity down the road, he's going to try and take a shot back at her to even the score between the two of them. And I think that's what's making it hard for her totally to commit to that. Tom?
I was going to say, in defense of Garrick, he did mention, like, I think on a podcast, that Kirby was also in on the challenge throw. And during that challenge, Garrick actually injured himself. So he was pissed off that, you know, these people were throwing a challenge and he's giving.
But that just proves more my point. That basically proves that he's emotional and that he was the rift between the two of them. And no matter what, while Garrick was in the game, I don't think there was any chance for Ferris and for Kirby to work together, because Garrick would not have gone that way. I feel like he would have been like, no, not working with her.
And because Kirby was also targeting Ferris.
Yeah, 100%.
Well. Yeah.
So basically, you know, looking at this, the feast, I like I said, great moment. Love the search for the idols. Obviously, I wanted Mark to find the idol on the other side. Ree does end up finding it. She does tell Kirby about that as well when they're in the immunity challenge, when they're in the water going up against each other. But overall, again, big immunity challenge for Jaden, holding both Winner and Raymond while Mark dunks, and the legend of the Dolphin still exists. Like, Mark is unbeaten when it comes to his performances in these water challenges. And seeing him swim Kahuna, it kind of gave me that flashback of the Olympic gold swimmer that we had in the Challenge Australia. Is it Emily as well? That was really good. Yeah, he's got that Emily grace Seabong. About the way that he... Yeah, Emily Seabong.
Who was, like, actually, I mean, a Seabong.
Yeah. Like, it's just, it's, there's levels to this thing. There's levels to this game. And I don't know if there's anybody...
Streamlined. He's got
aerodynamics. Anybody survivor that can compete against them. We'd have to get Shane Gold back out there to give him a run. And I think then it would be fair on other people out there if they were to go head-to-head in these challenges.
Well, 70-something?
Yeah, that. Well, listen, she was still she was a gun when she was on Survivor doing those challenges. But yeah, great fun to see them go out there. Great fun challenge. Obviously, the physicality of it, something we love about Australian Survivor, that they don't move away from these physical immunity challenges. But ultimately, the Rebels do win, which means that they do have to go to Tribal Council. This is where, you know, Kelly starts scrambling. No one wants to throw her a lifeline. We spoke about the result and how she went out. Is there anything that we've missed? Is there anything that you guys wanted to bring up? I think Blood Money has got something here for us as well. So we'll go with your thought first, and then I'll bring up, because I think what Bloody Money has asked us there is a good way to sort of end the podcast as well. But you go ahead, Kuna.
I just can't get this one image out of my head. Someone was asking about the Kelly talking to Kitty, spilling all the beans, and it was such a good scene. I loved how Kirby was kind of, she went there in order to kind of control the like see what's going on, see where it's like,
yeah.
And watching Kelly, and she was like, just put some food in your mouth, woman. Just, you know, and I was like, I always think of like, how are they having these conversations at the table without people hearing it, right? And she wasn't. People were hearing it. But there was one point where she was chatting to Kitty, and I'm like, can they actually hear what she's saying right now? Because this is really dumb if they can hear it. And then the camera zoomed out ever so slightly, and Kirby was here, like right over Kelly's shoulder while she's talking in Kitty's ear. And I'm like, oh my God. And it was so such a perfect epitome of Kelly, where she's being sneaky, she's spilling beans, she's being bad at Alliance, and Kirby's just watching her over her shoulder. It's so dumb. It was amazing.
Yeah. But Kahuna, to make it even worse, like if this is Kitty's face, Kelly was doing this. So I've got. She was like right there, like while she was eating as well. And, everyone stinks. Let's be real. And just imagine seeing like Kelly's face right here, like with all this food in her mouth, and I would just be like,
and the volume. Like,
yeah, like throw up. And you know it's warm out there. They're on a tropical island. Like, it couldn't have been fun. Markia says the monk overgrowth on the side slowed me down, so we didn't even see him at his peak performance.
He's still very aerodynamic.
Yeah, I think big time Val revenge are coming up, and I think that's why I still wouldn't count Val out. Like, I still wouldn't count her out. I think that the editor is definitely showing us that she's flawed, but that doesn't mean she couldn't go on to have a very good run in the show, take out all the people who wronged her, and then have a very compelling story at the end when she gets to Tribal Council to say why she deserves to win. Because we know that from the merge onwards, that's what matters. How is she going to play the game now? How is she going to treat people in the game? Will they respect big gameplay? There's some big game players in this season if she does have a very good run. I don't think anybody at this point we can count out from potentially winning the show still at this point. I think there is quite a few options still on the table. And, you know, while we're talking about that, Bloody Money 47 here says, who do you think is the best position heading into the merge to win this? And I always like to start with Mucky, because Mucky's got the spicy takes right off the bat, so we get that. We rip it like a Band-Aid over here, you know? Mucky, go for it. Who's winning this season?
Oh, who's... Okay, so in terms of...
Or best position, winning, heading into the merge, to win it.
Okay, so I reckon best position is actually Eileen. And the reason why I said, oh my gosh, shocker. Wow, who saw that coming? But I obviously did. But anyway, so the reason why I think she's in the best position going into merge is that it's public knowledge that Alex has an idol and Ferris has an idol. And what's so good is that rather than it being an individual game, you've got three different factions. You've got Ferris's alliance, his four, Kirby's four, and the Mafia, right? Well, I guess Kirby's got five because of Rihanna as well. And so I think that there's so many different options where each side could, you know, like for example, with Kirby, because Rihanna could link up with the Mafia to take out Ferris's group. You know, Ferris's group could be the swing vote as well. There's so many different combinations that could happen, right? Maybe the eight new Titans stay together to take out the Mafia. But I think that when you know that Alex and Ferris both have idols, they're going to want to try flush them rather than go for Eileen, if that makes sense. Especially when they have a splittable majority of like 5 and 5 as well.
But they would split on Eileen.
What's going on. No, they'll split between like Alex and Ferris and try and make one of them not play the idol.
So basically what you're saying is Aileen's in the best position because she could do the Stephen Bradbury strategy, and just by literally surviving and all these people taking each other out around each other, they will all fail on their way on the ice skating ring, and she will go past in the end and win it. That's basically what you're trying to say.
Sure. It's a Sasquatch strategy.
Hey, you're Mucky. You're
not there. How does that... So the person in the best position is the one that doesn't have an idol out of the three that are going to get targeted.
Yeah. Look, hear me out, hear me out.
Yeah. So they're not going to put the vote on her at all. They're going to put the vote on one of the people, and they're going to play like, you know, where everybody else is playing knots and crosses.
They're
going to
make them flush the idol, but vote on Eileen.
Look, they've got, so let's have Kirby's group and Mafia stick together, is 5-5, right? Against their four. So they can literally do 5-5. They can literally do 5 Alex, 5 Ferris. Because it's Alex and Ferris.
There's so many possible combinations. But to say that's the best position in the entire game is freaking weird.
I've got one of this, Chris. I do. We talked about last week that Merge is going to be all that war between all these massive players, right?
The problem that you have is you're making like these wild assumptions and creating this fantasy novel of what is going to happen from this point forward in the game.
I'm trying to explain this point. I think Eileen could be one of the people.
Okay. The Stephen Bradbury strategy.
It's the Sasquatch strategy, which is known. Everyone knows she's there.
Not real.
Okay.
No, she is
fictional.
The big part is real.
I'm moving it on from here. Let's get some common sense back into the podcast here. Kahuna, who do you have in the best position at the moment heading into the merge?
Heading into the merge is different to who will go to the end and win, right? Right now, going into the merge, I think Kirby is in the best position. She's the most powerful in the biggest alliance. Marky did the math. She was like, oh, there's the Middle-Age Mafia, and then Ferris is 4 and Kirby's 5. Plus Mark, if Val brings him in, that's 6. Like, the other groups are going to have to join. And, like, can they pull Jaden as well? Like, she is in the best spot. It doesn't necessarily mean she'll win, but right now, going into merge, she's comfortable.
She seems insulated.
With Ferris wanting to work with her as well, right? Yeah. Like, he's not even trying to go against her right now. He's put guns down, so...
I don't see her going next either. Like, I'd be shocked if she goes next, going into the merge, based on the fact that Mark most likely will link back up with Valeria. Valeria's with that alliance. Like, it just seems that there's strength in numbers at this point in the game for Kirby. So I do agree with you in regards to her being in the best position. That's who I would have going into the merge in the best position at this stage as well. Doesn't mean that I think she's going to win the show. I think that she's going to become too obvious. I love the fact that when she was sitting down with, we didn't really talk about this, how she was going into coach mode, talking to both Valeria and Winner about the strategy, not the first time we've ever seen it with little rocks about where the numbers are and what they could do to try and get the two idols out. I thought that was great, but she's also showing that she's got an analytical mind for the numbers and a bit of strategy there. And she's openly showing Valeria and Winner this, which could come back to bite her in the back. So I don't know if she'll win it, but I agree. I think she's in a very solid position. Who do you have, Tom?
I'm going to sort of focus more on who I think is in the worst position. I think Kitty and Caroline are pretty screwed. I think because like you know, Mark and Val going to reunite, that's going to turn Val against them. Therefore, Winner's also going to be against. Winner could potentially pull Jaden on back to his side because they're bros. So then Jaden will be against them. I don't see any of like the rebels in particular wanting to work with them. And I think like because Caroline and Kitty are so close. Obviously, Eden's close as well. But I think from a perception view, you'd like Eden would be able to slide by, especially because he's like very charming and everything. Meanwhile, if I'm being honest, out of this entire cast, I reckon Caroline is the person I would struggle the most to get along with. I feel like if I had a relationship with her, it would be me pretending to just be like her underling and just like feed her ego because she seems like that kind of person. In the game, at least, like I don't know her personally. And so
you're on treacherous waters here, saying you know Caroline is such a disliked person on the show.
Look, I'm saying I reckon Kitty's going to take the fall because Kitty's obviously more of a physical player than Caroline. So they'll weaken Caroline by getting rid of Kitty. I see her being the next boot.
I do agree. Yeah, I think it's a good read.
In terms of who's the looking the best,
do you agree with Winner? Or Chardu's saying Winner has the best position. It's connected to the Mafia, Jaden, Valeria, Kirby, and Scott going into the merge.
I guess he's got the most options, but I also don't think he's got like the brains to use those options.
What, you weren't impressed by his play to get the votes on him at Tribal Council?
Well, look, I reckon they should vote me out, honestly. I don't want them to vote me out, but like I'm just thinking they should think about that.
I was the one that didn't want to hear them out. I was the one who said the vote should be, you know, I don't want to be voted out, but you're listening. I don't want other people to be catching bullets here, like, you know.
Yeah.
I think to be fair,
that's a hard move to pull off though, right?
Yeah.
Like how do you
know what the funniest thing for me was in that vote when they all looked so shocked when, you know, Aileen and Ferris did the obvious thing by splitting their vote. It's simple math. And they're all like, oh, there was another option. They could split their vote and get a revote. It's like, have you guys never watched Survivor? Have you never done the numbers? Like, that to me was the most funny
moment. No discussion. It's not unheard of that they wouldn't do that. Like, considering there's zero discussion, sprung it on them like that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Aileen's saying here, Mucky is my most loyal ally. Loving the discussion and Tom and Chris cracking up. And then Mark saying, of course you love Aileen when you have a ride or die on the podcast.
Look, Mark's been taking shots at me all week. Like, I post something on Instagram and Mark called me out on it, like, wow, of course you'd post something something like that.
Obviously, Mark, he's already pinned you down. He gets you. He knows what you're about. And he's just keeping you honest. He's keeping you in line. Mark, thank you for doing the boys a favor when we're not around on social media to keep our poor Mucky out of trouble. You're doing the right thing and you're keeping him on the straight and narrow. I appreciate you, Mark.
I'm liking Mark more and more every podcast. Yeah. You know, he's more on the podcast.
He's climbing up on the ranks. He's climbing up.
All I got to say is fans versus favorites. It's already a rivalry. Mate,
it's not a rivalry when you go home first, Mucky. That's all I'm saying. It would be like Redemption Island all over again with Russell Hans and Boston Rob going in for the rivalry, and then with one of you, Mucky, leaving.
I'll be the Matt Elrod. I've done my way through, but somehow still get voted out straight away again.
Can we just point out, Gabe's now roasting me. He's like, oh, now you like him, Tom. So I spoke a little bit ill about male, but now I can't speak ill about males either. You know, sorry, everyone's perfect, Gabe. Everyone in the world is perfect, and I love them all so much.
Oh, my God.
Frere Jacques, welcome to the podcast. John may again, do. Saying, yeah, I reckon that winners pretty safe, at least at the start of the merge. What else do we have here? Adrelly said, for us and Mark, team up, please. I think there's a high likelihood of that happening. Yeah. I would not be surprised at all. They've been talking a lot of strategy, sharing information and challenges and things
The Val poison, though.
Like, that's the trouble.
Like, yeah.
But maybe Mark could be the person who could smooth things over. Maybe he's the one that can get Valeria to work with for us up to a certain point in the game.
That'd be great.
Let's see what others. Adrelly agrees. I like that. We need more comments of people agreeing with me. That's really good. on that note, we've had a lot of fun here talking about this week's Survivor. I'm excited to see what's going to happen next week when we get the merge coming up. Great gameplay ahead, I'm sure. We've got a lot of great big game players still left in the game. A few of them even made an appearance here on the live today. So, you know, for those that couldn't catch us live, we normally go live at 9 p.m. on Thursday evenings, Australian Eastern Standard Time. On YouTube. So if you're listening to this later on or you hear it on one of our audio platforms, be sure to come and follow us also on our YouTube channel, The Nullified Take. Please subscribe. Please consider liking the video, putting a comment on below. What did you like? What did you agree with? What did you disagree with? It's fine. We love both comments here. I try and read through them as much as I can and reply to them. We really appreciate everybody here that have hung out with us and had some fun tonight. And we will be back next week to talk about week 5 of Australian Survivor. But for now, everybody, grab your torches, head back to camp. We'll catch you guys next time. Bye.
Bye.